Hello and welcome to episode number 4 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
Keep that tape on. Coming up, for the first time, we'll have a guest on the program. We wanted to go big, but we couldn't find any of the guys on our list, so we're going to settle for the head football coach of the University of Illinois. Just kidding. He was the ask, and he said yes. So stick around for that. We also have some Illini basketball to talk about and a bit of sad news when it comes to the world of Illini sports. We're going to do all of that, but first, Robert, let's light the eye. So a big weekend of Illini athletics that we need to get into, but we'd be remiss if we didn't start with the news that we learned Sunday night about the passing of Illini football coach Mike White.
Yes.
And whenever something like this happens, it takes you to where were you, during a certain era if you were alive. And I know the 1980s meant so much to the Illini football fans out there, students, the alums, and whatnot. And of course, it takes us there, but also recognize that, there's a family. Chris White was interviewed today, and there's, your heart goes out to everybody who's mourning and mourning the loss. And it's also a guy who helped lead a renaissance of Illinois football.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was, just a year and a half ago, I shared this story in what I wrote today, but just a year and a half ago, my wife and I were flying back from Los Angeles, connecting through Dallas. Planes were delayed because of a storm or something like this, and we sat on the tarmac trying to get off of our connecting flight and get to our Champaign connecting. Ran through the terminal. By the time we got to the terminal, they had just shut the doors, and there were four people also waiting, trying to get on that same plane that got there late. And we decided, all of us, my wife and I and these two other people, decided to fly to Peoria and then split the cost of a shuttle in order to get home that night. And one of them was Matt White, Mike White's other son. It was great. He got to tell all kinds of stories. I mean, we were traveling with them then for the next 5 hours, and he got to tell all kinds of stories of growing up in Champaign and Lauren Tate and his dad and all of that. So it was a really special moment. He was coming home for a different funeral. So my heart goes out to Matt and the whole family. It's tough. Look, I'm sitting here today because Mike White rebuilt the football team, and my dad showed it to me, and we watched the Michigan game in 1983, and I was like, I want to do that forever. And so, the reason I started the blog and all of that sources is that one moment in 1983, the Run for the Roses game. And so I'm not sitting in this chair right now if it's not for Mike White.
And I also recognize that a little bit different how the timing, all that, but Mike White launches a rebirth of Illinois football, and it's also when you start to get the steady success that came under Lou Henson, and that's why people can look back and the 80s belonged to the Illini was the big phrase, but things were cooking in the 1980s both for football and men's basketball. And now you can look here in the mid 2020s, success for both of those programs, plus women's basketball is doing very well, and success all over in other kinds of programs as well. So it's just a little bit of a, maybe there's a lot of dominoes between, but without Mike White,
yep,
in terms of Illinois success, where would we be now?
Absolutely. And that year, that 83, fall of 83 season, and then spring of 84 was the Elite Eight for basketball. I mean, that was the kind of moment after almost 20 years of things not going well, post slush fund in the 60s. We know what the 70s were for Illinois athletics. Those were the years. That year sparked it all, 83 football, and then 83, 84 basketball season. That was the launch of what everybody remembers from the 80s. So, yeah, he's a legend around here.
All right. Well, on Saturday, Illinois basketball, second Big Ten ball game of the year, hosting Nebraska. It was a game that felt like Nebraska was largely in control, but Illinois still tied it with just a few seconds left. I think it was about 20 seconds or so, as I recall, 80-80 on a Tomislav Ivicic three-pointer. But Lawrence from Nebraska hits one with 0.2 seconds left to make it 83-80, and Nebraska goes on to win it. The Illini are now 1-1 in Big Ten play. Nebraska came in ranked 23rd. They slide up to 15 in the polls today, I believe. And Illinois falls down to 18. But make no mistake, Nebraska is a really good basketball team. Let's listen to a clip here, because Brad Underwood was frustrated about the defense. And he was asked specifically in the post game about what needed to go differently for the defense.
It's a mental thing with us. I'm not worried about a guy getting on a heater. We let Casey Tamananga do the same thing. We've had other guys go off and have big games and a half. One guy's not going to beat you. Tonight was, they're good. Rank causes you problems. They've done that against everybody. They just 30-balled Wisconsin. They're going to make some really hard shots. What I didn't like is our approach to guarding them. And it's a mental tenacity. It's a toughness. It's a grit. We've had that. We had that in Tennessee. We actually had it throughout most of the Ohio State game, especially in the second half. And tonight it was just laissez-faire. It was, you look at our front line. There's nothing. You got a horrendous stat line from everybody that played. No rebounds. There's nothing there. And that's on me. That's in practice. That's getting more from them. They never give you a post up. Zach Edey never scored against them. That's not what they do. That's not what they give up. But having the ability to drive the ball downhill, and that's all we talked about, and having the ability to then score so you can get your defense set a little bit, mental acuity, mental awareness in transition. How does the best shooter in the Big Ten get a butt-naked three, 3 minutes into the game in transition? That's just five dudes out there who aren't dialed in, and that's where I've got to help them.
Well, did you ride a roller coaster there, Robert?
I don't know if I've heard of a butt-naked three before, but
I think that's a way of saying unguarded,
yes,
open.
Yes, yes. It was interesting, because what he's talking about was very – look, I had been to all three games. I had been to Nashville. I had been to I'd been to the Tennessee game. I went to the Ohio State game. I went to this game. I was seated near the court for all three. And the start of this game, there was a very, like, what's going on here? Like, not just because Samford is hitting all these threes, but it was a, like, oh, they're – not really getting after this. Like, what's there's like a little, is it just you go back home and you take it easy a little bit, or this should be pretty easy, we're favored by 10, we're back at home. I don't know what it was, but it was very noticeable from the start that it wasn't the same intensity as that. And obviously suddenly it's 20-8 before you blink, and Illinois was climbing uphill the whole game. So it's quite interesting. Look, it's still college athletics. There are still coaches have to be master motivators to get these teams and these people ready for every single game, and ready for, hey, you just had an emotional win on the road. You got to be ready on Saturday. And, the snow and the crowd was a little light and it just wasn't as intense, and Nebraska was ready to go. And before they blinked, down double digits.
That's not to take away from the performances for Keaton Wagler. He was just named Freshman of the Week, 21 points and 7.5 assists in the two Big Ten games. Shot 50% from the field, 54% from three, and of course had the big 23-point game against Ohio State. But there is some youth on the team. I don't know if that's an excuse, but Brad Underwood was asked about why David Mirkovic didn't see much of the floor, and he said he was causing turnovers. He said his line was, I think his mind was in Serbia, just kind of wasn't mentally there in the way he needed to be to execute at a high level, and you're going to ride some ups and downs. There's a lot of basketball teams that do that.
Yep.
And especially at times you will hit that with freshmen. Again, I don't know if that was the case. There could be any number of reasons why somebody's not dialed in. Yeah, maybe it was we just have won two big games. Maybe you lose a bit of your edge.
Yeah, and Nebraska came in with an edge.
Like, well, they're coming in 10-0, and everyone is saying, yeah, but you haven't played anybody yet.
Yep.
They hadn't had a quad one game yet.
Yep.
So there was some fire there.
Yep, and they were ready to go and ready, and they brought a decent little pack of fans there in that one section where they can, and their bench was loud. It was very obvious 5 minutes into the game they were ready, and obviously once Sanford's hitting all these threes, they're getting louder and louder and louder. It was just really, it's just disappointing. You can't, if you're trying to win Big Ten title, those are the games you're going to look back and say, like, oh man, lost at home to Nebraska. Well, there it was right there. Finish one game out. Well, there it was. Those Maryland loss in 2021, that was that game of like, oh, there it is right there. You find some way to stay intense and win that game. You're going to be in this, but yeah, it's just a really disappointing loss. It's hard to stomach as a fan because you have just had such two emotional wins away from home, and you're coming back home and you're ready to put on a big performance, and it was just flat. It just was.
But Nebraska's a really good team. This wasn't a stubbed your toe in a game. I don't know if you want to say they should have won. I don't like the shoulds.
Sure.
Anyway, in sports, but just because it's Nebraska, it's not the same Nebraska. I mean, we know that Nebraska has had more success under Hoiberg lately.
Sure.
But it's not the fact that you lost to Nebraska. That's respectable. Nebraska's KenPom and Net just all went up crazy.
Sure.
With the new numbers. That's fine. What Underwood is saying is, I can take a loss. I think this is what he's saying. I can take the loss. I can't take the effort or lack thereof.
Yep.
A mental effort of what it was.
Especially in a game where Nebraska doesn't have much depth. Like, I think the first bench guy to score for Nebraska was with like 9 minutes left in the game. They're a five guy team. And when you play those teams that really only have five and you're, short stints for the bench guys, but you got to get the starters back in because once the bench guys are in, you're losing your lead. When you play a team like that, you really need to wear them down in the final 10 minutes. The reason teams don't play four guys for 40 minutes every game is because it's really hard and you're going to wear down. Everybody needs a breather here and there. And for a team like Nebraska, you need to use your depth and run them around and get them so tired that no shots are falling in the final 10 minutes. And that's when you take over. And it just didn't happen. And then one of their bench guys, his name was Jared Garcia. Every time Tim Sinclair said it, it sounded like Jerry Garcia in the arena. But yeah, Jared Garcia made those huge plays in the last few minutes, and Illinois gets the L.
Could have some promotion there with Cherries Garcia.
100%. I've thought of the NIL deals for him, but that's another topic.
Well, here's the good news. First of all, Bragging Rights comes this Monday, the 22nd, and maybe before that game, you'll have some thoughts to share about Bragging Rights.
Robert. I might. There might be some history there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just being a St. Louis guy, you may have some connection with that game. And you also have, it's finals week, but you also have a week off to do some more Brad Underwood practices.
Yes.
So I imagine there's a possibility that the team could improve and that they may be encouraged to do so.
Yes. There might be some sweat happening.
Yeah, go back and look at the history of Illinois teams under Brad Underwood. There's been some funkiness at times in December, and then there's some getting things right that happens.
And we just saw it with, what they had a week off after, what was it, UConn, then there was eight days off. And he talked in the postgame press conference at UConn about, like, I'm happy to have a week where we can just set these rotations and get some things figured out. And then when they came out against Tennessee a week later, everything looked a lot different and more crisp and more set in who's going to play and what the rotations are and this and that. So hopefully it's the same thing this week.
All right. Also a win for women's basketball, 81-69 over North Texas on Sunday afternoon at the State Farm Center. As we all know, that is a 12-point win, but Robert likes the 81-69 win.
Yes.
That's a better 12-point win than if it was 82-70.
100%. Yes. The example I always give of this is the score of 80-59 versus a team winning 79-60. 80-59 just feels like the world's biggest blowout. You know, those teams are so far apart. There's an 8 on the scoreboard and there's a 5 on the scoreboard. You remove 1 point from one team, add 1 point from another team. 79-60, it just sounds like, they won. A 7-something to a 6-something. So I've been tweeting about it for a decade now. It's stupid. It's dumb. But at the end of a game,
we know.
If at the end of the game, it's like 78-58, I am panicked about the walk-ons giving up a layup to make it 78-60. And I want those walk-ons to score because I need those numbers to be as far apart as possible. Why? For no other reason than my own brain.
It's like you will buy something for $9.95, but not $10.
I'm probably that guy. Yes.
I know what this gimmick is.
I do that. Like my wife will ask me how much something cost. Like, I went out and spent this, and I'll give the one number below it. Like, it was something like 190 or something. No, it was $199.99. I'm not going to say 200. I'll always, close down on the lower side of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Illinois women's basketball yesterday scored in the 80s.
Yes.
While holding their opponent to a score in the 60s.
Yes. I mean. Yes. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of a mud fest in the first quarter especially, but then Barry Wallace, among others, but Barry Wallace was lights out, hitting shots from all over the place, especially from three-point range. And Gretchen Dolan gets to the honor roll for Big Ten Players of the Week also. So congratulations there. Women are in action Friday night. They host Jackson State, and then they will open up Big Ten play on December 28th.
And that's what this November-December schedule is about, right? You have four new starters. You've got everything new. You got to figure it out. You know, if they were playing this kind of schedule like what Underwood has played, that would have been a heavy, heavy load for a brand new team. So it's good to, these teams serve their purpose and you get some things figured out and then you hit Big Ten play.
All right, that's a little bit of our lay of the land. When we come back, we're going to get to our guest. If you were with us for the Get to Know You episode that we just did, we delved into the world of tubists.
Yes.
And so one of the things we were looking for in our first guest is former tuba players.
Yes, who is the best tuba player we could find?
And that also is a head coach of Illini football.
Yes, and we landed that exact person. And we're going to talk tuba.
Brett Bielma joins us next.
As always, Light the Eye is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, which is U of I Community Credit Union. I figured today I would take you through the locations. Some people may not know, and some people may just know of the branch on South First Street and think that that's just the one location. But as you can see from this map here, these are all their branch locations. They have three in Champaign-Urbana. One is in the Research Park there on South First Street. One on University Avenue in Urbana. They also have one in the Union. And there are also branches in Danville, Mahomet, Bloomington, and Normal. So this is not just not just a Champaign area financial institution. They are across the region with different branches. And as I say every week, you get to, I'm the Illini fan and I want a block eye on my card, and that's what I have. So thank you to U of I Credit Union for being our presenting sponsor, and now to our special guest.
Welcome back to Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. Scott Beatty, Robert Rosenthal, and it's time for our very first guest.
Yes.
Of our podcast.
Like it.
We wanted
very first.
Yes. We wanted to go big.
Why not get the head football coach?
You know him in his fifth season. It's Brett Bielma. The Illini are headed to their third bowl in 5 years at the end of the month. Music City Bowl taking on Tennessee. Brett Bielema has always got a busy schedule, but you're making some time for us. We can't thank you enough.
Absolutely. Excited to be the first. I don't get to do that very often, so excited and honored to be here.
Appreciate it.
Robert's going to have so many questions, so I have to get the first question in. All your years, from your playing days at Iowa to your assistant to head coach at Wisconsin to Arkansas, NFL assistant here, have you ever met anybody like Robert?
And a very unique person, but met him literally my first day on the job. We got on a plane and flew to a game against Penn State at Penn State. Wasn't a lot there. It was during COVID, so very unique set of environments. But actually, I think Josh had told me that you were going to be there.
Interesting. And, I know I had been lobbying with Kent all day to say, like, hey, I'm going to be there. I'm the only media there. Give me an interview.
Well, what's cool is the next time we were there, we had the longest overtime game in the history of college football and
won
it.
That's right. And you mentioned it in the post. Yes. Yes.
Ranked number 7, I think, at the time.
They were, yes. Yeah.
So that was kind of the – I always think back, right, 5 years removed. Scott, you just mentioned it. Like, you know, 3 out of 5 years at a bowl game. And to think how close we were in those other 2 years, right? It was 5 wins. It wasn't like there was a year where there was 2 or 3. We were 1 win away both of those years to be in 5 straight bowl games. Obviously didn't make it, but – it shows kind of just where we've been and where we're going. But I always go back to that game at Penn State. I think that was the first time. I think the guys that I flew on the plane with knew that we could win the game. Mm-hmm. But I think that was when the outside world began to hear Illinois, right? Like, it didn't just happen. It wasn't just a fluke. We played really well, executed situational football. Josh always tells us on Wednesday of that week, Josh and I used to have weekly meetings. Just kind of the state of the art, and I thought early on in my program development I needed to have a contact with him on a weekly basis to set aside, and I told him on Wednesday, I said, hey, I'm not saying we're going to win this game, but I think you're going to enjoy this game, and uh-huh. And he always goes back to that, right, that I'll occasionally throw one of those at him, and he always loves them, but that one was really cool.
Yeah, Scott didn't tell me what his first question was going to be, so I'm going to the same plot. So I have the picture here, Al, if you want to pull it up, you can see it on here. So this is yes, that's us in our masks underneath the stadium talking that night. So this is the night. So it's 5 years ago Friday. So we're almost at 5 years. Wow. You've been in Champaign now. But I asked you a question that night, and that's going to be my first question. So I'm going to play it right now. So this is one of the questions I ask you in the interview, the photo that Kent took.
Specifically, what do you think the fans can expect from your Illini football team?
You know, one day into the job, I think that they can plan to expect that they're going to be proud of what they see on the field. I think when you are an Illini fan, you should be able to wear those colors, wear that emblem anywhere that you want to go, and have it be a pride. You know, have a sense of pride walking into wherever you're at with that on your chest. And whether you're young, old, male, female, alumni, non-alumni, just a fan, that's what we want to do instill.
We were all so young back then.
We were. And then we're talking through our masks. You can hear, like, our voices are muffled. Muted. Yeah. Yes. So you and I ran into each other at a gas station in town like 2 years ago or whatever. And we had the conversation about people wearing Illini gear around town. Are you able to see that? Because from my end, from the fan end, there are 6 times as many people wearing Illini gear as were in 2020. It is everywhere.
You know, I think, that day I had taken my daughters to school that day, if I'm not mistaken. And was filling up with gas, saw you, and I said, never know who you're going to run into at the gas station.
That's but exactly
what was
right.
The reason I said it was that day was during the non-season. It was during the spring. I tried to take my girls to school at least twice a week, even in season, out of season. And one of the things is that day I was able to walk my youngest to class, and it seemed like every kid was wearing an Illinois shirt, right? Yeah. And it seemed like there was just an abundance of it. And I don't know if I'd felt that before and you know, I definitely think this now. What was really cool for me just last weekend to go over to the Tennessee basketball game, right? I don't get to see athletic competitions like that. Like, I obviously am at one every week as a football coach,
right?
But I never see the things beforehand. You know, we went to a pregame watch. We went to Nashville Barstool, right? And first I'm like, really, we're going to go to a Barstool bar, right? But it was awesome. Like, and there was young fans, there were older fans, there were alumni, there were – you know, people that had been gathering there for these kind of environments with their college buddies. So you had a bunch of guys, had mother and daughter that caught me on the way out. And I always go back to, you know, you create moments with these wins, but you create memories with the experience, right? And I think that's so critical. I can't tell you how many times people have said you've made it so much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And they want to win them all too, right? Yeah. But they want to create memories, and I think that's what we're always doing.
And I see that from our, you know, because I'm hanging out on the fan end, and I'm doing the tailgates, and I'm doing the pregame stuff, even the bowl games and everything else. The excitement, the pride, the I'm wearing my Illini gear on the plane, and hey, the, you know, when they were doing the announcements on the plane, somebody said ILL into the mic and this and that. It has changed so, so much in the last 5 years. That's why I've always been curious if that trickles down to you, if you get to see that, because it's the true fan fruits of what you have accomplished.
I don't only get to see it, I get to feel it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's really cool, you know, perfect icing on the cake. Brad Hopkins was back for, I believe it was our second to last game. I don't think it was, it wasn't Northwestern, but who was that before? Northwest, Rutgers, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad Hopkins and I played against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And really unique career because, you know, he was drafted by Houston and then he moved to Nashville with him, right? So he got a chance to kind of stay with the same team and organization. And one of the first things he said to me, he's like, Coach, I'm so proud of what you've done here. He goes, I can wear my stuff with pride now anywhere I want to go, right? And here's a former letterman, first-round draft pick that played so many years in the NFL, and he's talking about getting a chance to wear his Illinois gear, right? And
that
says something to me, to hear our Illinois guys play on Sundays right now in the NFL, to see some of these guys that, you know, are now, you know, furthering our word, right, because now they're achieving greatness in the NFL. Those are cool moments.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
So – I do have a question as you enter into this, a transition time between the bowl but also into roster building for next year. This is more broad-based. Whether next year's starting quarterback is on the roster right now or to be added, that's immaterial. I'm more just curious. You've had one of the greatest quarterbacks in Illini history in Luke. Like, what – and you just get only so many opportunities – it's not like a pitcher, well, he doesn't have it today, but we got 14 other on the roster. Like, the quarterback is everything. I'm looking at the NFL, and it's like Philip Rivers gets a job because there's not 32 quarterbacks out there, right? So my question is, how do you know? Does it feel like a risk when you, you know, Dan Hartlib from baseball always says, sometimes you just never know until the lights go on.
Yeah.
You know, so how can you know
when
you got a guy?
There's probably a little bit to that. I do know the last two quarterbacks we've signed, Carson Boyd is probably when he walked in and I got a full spring in with him last year, I probably knew that was the best incoming freshman high school quarterback I've ever signed, right? Just pure talent, read it, understand it, and go with it. We haven't gotten Michael Clayton here, but Michael Clayton came to us this summer and threw a day with us in the indoor and threw to a couple prospects that are coming to us, a couple that aren't coming to us. But I remember I had never seen him throw live because when you can go out and evaluate these guys, a lot of times head coaches can't go there. So I'd been to Michael's school. I had met with him in his school, but I'd never seen him throw the ball live. And I walked off the field, and I felt that I just saw the most talented arm strength of a incoming high school player that I've ever been around. During our bye week, I went and watched our 27 quarterback play in a high school football game, and I know that I just watched the best high school quarterback that I'd ever watched play the game, right, in my opinion, right? So those three things got me excited about where we're at right now. I think Ethan is a really good player that you know, beat Notre Dame in a year when they went to the national championship game. There's only two teams that beat Notre Dame, and one of them was Northern Illinois, and Ethan was one of them. So he's kind of been in those environments, but you don't really know till you know. But I think it is an exciting time, unlike anything. But Luke himself, I remember when he walked in my head coach's office, and he was with his mom, and you know, he's probably 20 pounds lighter than he is now. You know, he had his baggy coat on, and he isn't one of these guys that just comes in and, you know, here I am, I'm the starting quarterback. He kind of has that little bit of humbleness to him, and I was kind of like, man, okay, is this guy got it right? But then when the lights came on and you saw him compete and the way he loves to compete, and then he's such an awesome kid. I've been head coach just going in my 18th year. Got a call from his dad, you know, literally right after the Northwestern game. And we didn't even know what bowl we were going to yet. We knew we had an idea, but his dad called him and said, hey, you know, during bowl prep, I would really like to host a dinner for all the people that helped Luke become who he is today. And I was psyched because now I just realized that we're having bowl practice. That must mean he's playing, right? And the second thing is I'm like just incredibly blessed by the humility of that family. So they got a group of like 70 people. Luke went through and just literally circled everybody. And it's none of the coaches, right? Because he knows his connection to those guys. But like, it's none of the coaches. It's all the student trainers, video people, training room, equipment room, all my strength staff, all my training room, all the video people. And it's the people that helped his daily journey to get him where he was. And they're all taking him dinner tonight at a pretty nice restaurant, probably in Champaign, Urbana, that I won't disclose. But like, Hamilton Walker's. All right, but like, it's one of those things that just, he's a very special kid for so many different reasons.
I mean, is that a part of him that you knew he was special, yeah, but then this just comes out and you just didn't know that was there?
You know, the humbleness and humility is pretty real. Like when he says things, you realize, you know, he's very Christ driven, very faith oriented kid, right? That didn't happen by chance. He truly is a mama's boy. I know him and his dad, you know, have many spirited conversations, but he is a mama's boy through and through, which usually is the best boys, because I know, yeah, I'm one too. But like, one of the things that really has impressed me is just his reaction to adversity. I think a lot of times, you know, even games this year where maybe it wasn't going great in the first half, he just kind of let that half be that half, and he owned the second half, right? And he just doesn't care what happens or how it happens. He just wants to be successful, and that's pretty impressive.
That kind of ties into something I've always wanted to ask you about. I have, you know, background in education and ministry as well, and people that I know that do work with college students. You know, generations change. And I'm just curious how you see, maybe in broader strokes, it's always tempting to say the next generation isn't as good as the one before. I don't think that's true at
right.
all. I just think
different.
Everyone's generation is different. How is it different? Maybe the needs are the same, but you know, I know you lean into family,
yeah.
But the types of conversations that you might not have now as a coach that maybe you didn't have to have in 2010 or vice versa.
Undoubtedly, we're all married, right? Like most of the conversations that cause people problems in those type of environments usually are driven around money, right? Or business relationships that don't go well or whatever it is, right? Like, and I think about what entered the picture 4 years ago that had never entered the picture was paying student athletes
sure.
money. So that money conversation has literally changed everything, right? Like, I'm telling you, we got great kids. We just tied a record, or we were one shy of most academic all Big Ten players in the history of Illinois football. So we still keep putting great players out with it, think the right way. But that money dynamic has changed everything. It really has. I mean, you'll have a conversation now that gets a little tense that I think 5 years ago didn't become tense, because they always think they probably need a little bit more or deserve a little bit more. So that's different. But I try to keep it about the main thing, which is, you know, trying to make them better every day. Talk to them about, hey, money's a great part of it, but, you know, some of these guys, I'll tell them, like, literally, hopefully, this is the smallest contract you'll ever sign. I told Gabe Backus last year when he came back for the number he came back for, I said, brother, I believe this will probably be the smallest contract you ever sign, because I know where he's going to get drafted, right? So that's kind of a neat thing for some of those guys. The scary part for me is, you know, guys are making money now. Like, it's not unrealistic to think if you have a guy that's contributing on our football team, they're probably making, you know, anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million, right? And I think I remember the first time I went from making $94,000 at the University of Iowa, and I got a co-coordinator job at Kansas State, and I think I jumped to $106,000. And I thought I was, you know, the richest man in the world, right? Like, and I think I went and celebrated at a Texas Roadhouse with a $9.99 filet and thought it was awesome, right? But, like, I think these kids now are making money that they may never make again, right? They're going to go to a job as a first-year employee working somewhere as an insurance guy or a financial guy or a graph, whatever it is, and they're going to make, you know, $60,000 and have to go to work every day,
yeah,
and have 2 weeks of paid vacation, and they're going to have that reality, like, wait a minute, I made $250,000, all I had to do was go to class, it was online, right? It's just, we're setting them up for some things that unrealistically I think are going to catch them.
And how does that change the, I mean, obviously the portal is now January, but how does that change those conversations? I know you usually meet with every player.
Yeah, I'm right in the middle of it. I got the reason we jumped this time frame is tonight I have I tried it. Like, I used to literally go in like 4 days, and I would go from 8 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. Honestly, I would have like 20 interviews, 30 interviews a day.
Sure.
I can only emotionally take 6 hours or 3 hours each day now, so there are every 15 minutes, so a 3 hour block, I interview 12 kids a day. That's all I can do.
Yeah.
Like, it's emotionally draining, and I kind of can't get too involved. I don't want one conversation to bleed into the next one, so I can only do six. I do an hour and a half time block, and then I take an hour and a half, and I do another hour and a half time block. And it's unfortunate. It used to be my favorite point of the year. Honestly, like to sit down and visit with every one of my players, ask them how mom's doing, how Uncle Joe's doing, you know, how's things at home, and talk about their living arrangement and why he's living with that guy. He's a little crazy. Like, is he a slob? Right? Is, you know, we joke around. Now it's kind of like a very. And now I even got a voice message last week from an SEC coach that like was very entertaining for me, because I think I've got it a lot better than most people, because I think some places are just absolutely off the walls right now, you know. So
sure,
live in the moment you're in, enjoy the moment you're in. I love what I do, wouldn't trade it in for the world. It's an exciting time now, more than any other time. There are just these little moments that you got to get through.
Yeah,
when you're, especially if you're talking to maybe a potential add to your roster, and you're having these conversations, you know, I think about, I always trained, if you're going in for a job interview, they're probably going to make their decision within the first minute or two just based on how you present yourself. So obviously a player's tape is their tape, right? But is it that quick? I kind of know. Or do you let it sort of ride out a little bit?
You know, we are a big, I think because of the way we play, I always say Illinois has got to have a chip on not only your right shoulder but your left shoulder, right? So I constantly look for that kind of demeanor in the guy. I think they got to like football, and that's not guaranteed by how much you pay him, right? Like, you can't pay someone to play better. Like, you can pay people to get them in your building if you think they can play, right? But, yeah, we really probably do a lot more in the investment side once we know who they are. Like, I literally, for the most part, won't offer a kid a financial number until I meet with them. And that's just how I've rolled. You know, during the bye weeks, I was – you know, I would doubt there's very few head coaches during their two bye weeks that logged as many hours on a plane that I did, right? And it's because I wanted to get in front of as many people as I could. I wanted to know who they were, right? And if, you know, we went to Portal Kids high schools because I want to know who they were, right? Like, we went to a high school my last day on the road during our second bye week of my favorite high school, my favorite Portal player that I know he's getting in. He knows he's getting in, but no one else knows he's getting in. Mm-hmm. But I want to go to that high school and find out everything I could about that kid, right? So there's a lot of things that are working. I think Illinois just kind of has to be ahead of where we're at. And I give Pat Hamilton and his staff a lot of credit for that, because we do a lot of pre-planning that I think helps pay off dividends for us in the end.
There can't be a December like this that you've had, right?
This
like, I mean, this is – A, you've got a kind of a roster turning over. You like got a lot of seniors playing in a bowl game prep. Recruiting is now done December 3rd, which is new and strange. Portal is now moved to January. What has this month been like?
It's insane. So, you know, for me, we've always also gone on the road right now recruiting while you're trying to prep for a bowl game, right? So it's kind of cool. Tomorrow we'll have our second Tennessee prep, right, our fourth practice overall, but we'll get in 10 practices on Tennessee before the game, right, which is about a 2.5 week prep normal. You know, if you got a 3-day window for a normal opponent, to have 10 practices is really awesome. So that's awesome. Meeting with our guys, but like literally Saturday, my guys came into work. We worked 3 hours on Tennessee, and then we put everything away. And the next 5 hours, we prioritized potential portal guys at every position, evaluated over 180 players on Saturday in our building, right? And that was down from almost 2,500 players. So to lay eyes on 2,500 people and narrow it down to 200 and prioritize them is absolutely a crazy amount of time on human hands, right? But
yeah,
I was talking to Josh last week. I think it was a Wednesday or Thursday. I just was falling behind on Tennessee prep. I also had some phone calls I needed to make. So I kind of crash at the office a couple nights a week during the fall, but I never usually do it out of season. I was talking to Josh late, and he's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Well, I'm going to crash here. I want to get done with this. We got a 6 a.m. tomorrow, the next morning." He's like, "It's December 8th, and you're in the office." I'm like, "It's just what it is. Like, there's not enough time in the day to get what you need to get done." So it's insane. And then the craziest part is going to be this. We're going to go on December 25th. We're all going to meet in Nashville. We're going to play a game on the 30th. The 31st is going to be New Year's Eve day, and our guys are going to come back. My wife and I are going to stay just to enjoy a day, because I know I won't be able to before that.
Yeah.
We'll fly back on the 1st, and then on the 2nd, we actually have 3 visitors coming right now already that will be in the portal when that day hits, and we can have them on campus. And the entire month of January, I pretty much either can be on the road or have to be here. I think I'll probably be in a on the road probably 28 out of the 30 days of January.
Wow.
And that's never been done before. There'll be a day probably where I'm in, you know, Dallas, and I might have to fly home to meet with a portal kid and his parents, have breakfast with him next morning, and then fly back to Dallas.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's crazy.
All right. I know we don't have you forever today, and we got to get to the important question, which is about the tuba. So, you know, I believe, do I have it right, all-state tuba player?
I was in an all-state tournament, but for whatever reason, the band would come together in a certain area, and you would play all day.
Yes.
Rehearse and practice and then play at night. Yeah.
I mean, he was a former music educator. Yeah. I tried out for Allstate. I made district, but not Allstate.
Might have
he
been
was
district a trumpet by player. That time, yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I was a trumpet player, and I
started as a trumpet, but I just got bigger.
Well,
love it.
Now as a band director, I know how vital that would have
been,
but I would have made Allstate, but as an underclassman, they wouldn't let you. Because they wanted to prioritize for the upperclassmen, but I had qualified for it. And then when I got to be an upperclassman, then I kind of folded in the audition.
Did they?
So the fact that you made Allstate and I didn't, kind of a little.
It might have been one of my exaggerations. I can't remember if it was state or district or region. Oh. I can't remember.
Yes.
The yeah, interesting there's like district
thing
and state.
Is my sister is your age and tried to make Allstate as a flute. There was some window somewhere that I might have been like at a concert where you were playing the tuba. But my question is football and like, did you stick with band? Like what was your parents like music education support and you're doing it all 4 years?
Yeah, I did all How did four. That you know, I did it because my brothers and sisters were in it. My little brother Barry played trombone, and then Mr. Johnson was actually our first band instructor, music teacher, and I really liked him.
Uh-huh.
Ironically, I was back. My dad moved into some assisted living, and we had actually been back to see him, and I was at a Casey's, and Mr. Johnson was inside.
Wow!
And I met him and talked to him, and it was really cool because. My girls were out in the car, so I brought him out, and I introduced Mr. Johnson to my daughters. I'm like, this is my band teacher. He was my music class, and they were going crazy because they got music class.
Yes.
So just to have that connection was pretty cool. I was so out of my mind. I had never done this before in my life. It's kind of embarrassing, but I had to fill my car up.
Yeah.
And because I saw him, I walked away while I was filling up, and I forgot to pull it back out. So we took off. And we snapped the gas cord, you know.
Were you like, dragging it down the road with you?
Like you know, I felt it. I snapped it.
Uh-huh.
But apparently morons like me have existed prior because they have the automatic safety
detach.
Disconnect. But it was in front of everybody.
Of course.
That place
back
knew
in
exactly
your hometown.
In my hometown, right outside.
Yes, yes.
Bill was an idiot.
I know you're a little town guy. I mean, you know, Preston's not the biggest.
It's small, yeah.
A lot of little towns... Like, we'll have the football players who are in band sometimes have to march at halftime.
Did it.
Like, not, you did, you do
I
that?
I did do that, yeah.
In uniform, put
in
the
uniform.
Tuba on?
I would take my shoulder pads off. Great story. My mom used to love to tell this story. My mom was on the board, the student education board. And, I was a sophomore, and I played in a sophomore JV game, in the JV game, and I went and, you know, everybody else was band warming up, so you had to go get your stuff. Well, I had gotten concussed during that game and didn't tell anybody.
Uh-huh.
And so I went, and the next thing I know, I woke up and there were people standing over me, and I had potentially was trying to get to the practice field, and apparently I either sat down or something, and I was in a heap with a tuba on me, and they found me in the middle of this parking lot.
Was it the sousaphone wrapped around you with the belt?
It was the big time tuba. Yep.
That's amazing.
Yep. Didn't make it to
Is there a picture somewhere of that?
I would imagine. I know I've seen a picture of me with a tuba.
Yep.
But yeah, it's funny.
That's amazing.
Do you get a moment? Because I know you said you got to be in Nashville on Christmas Day, right?
Yeah.
Do you get a moment for Bielma family Christmas?
Yeah, we're going to go on the 24th. I heard Jen explaining it to the daughters the other day that we're going to have Christmas on the 23rd. Apparently, we wrote a letter to Santa, and he cleared it. So I guess we did that last year, which I didn't know. We celebrated a day early last year because I know we went on Christmas Day last year. So last year on the 24th. So whatever we did a year ago, I'm a big superstitious guy, so we're doing it all over again. But
Santa's response quicker than the NCAA's.
I think very quick, very quick, and sometimes self-created. I was home on Sunday morning. And the elves on the shelves needed to have some transition, I think. So I got to do that. One was pretty awesome, which it just creating those memories is pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, listening to this. I went back and listened to our interview from 2020, and you were talking about, you know, the girls were, what, 2 and 20 months or 3 and 20 months or something?
Yeah. They were little ones.
Like, you've seen quite a transition for them.
Yeah.
In the 5 years here.
My girls are in gymnastics, and so I was with them. For a couple hours yesterday, they both had an hour back-to-back. So when we were sitting there, they love to get in my phone and look at old baby pictures, right? And just they just absolutely love it, and they start giggling. And yeah, we found a video yesterday of me and Bella where we were actually at our place down in Florida, and we were. I used to get a cup of coffee. She'd get a cup of OJ, and we were sitting on this bench that she remembered it right away. She goes, "I remember that bench," and she was like two or three, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's memories being built, just like I said, for our fan base, right? But memories building us as well.
Yep.
Well, just to put a button on this, a follow up to my first question, about Robert. Am I okay here? Because again, this is new territory for me. So you've never met somebody quite like Robert. Am I okay?
I think the passion that he shows. I actually I tell Brett all the time. Some of his stories that he writes, like the data that he collects, you know, informs me and gives me information. And you know, I think the perspective, the historian that he kind of displays at time is pretty cool. But it's also like he obviously admits it too. He's obviously in a profession, but he lets his fan show through, which I think is awesome, right? Like I think. We all love this game, right? And, you know, it's kind of interesting. So last week I had a player, Monty Ball, got inducted in the Hall of Fame in Vegas. And I had totally planned on going, but since the bowl game is where it is, like, just no way I could get to it. But I sent him a text that day, and we reached out and talked. And, you know, that was when I was a head coach of Wisconsin. Like, I am a huge Monty Ball fan, and he's in the Hall of Fame, man. Like, it's just absolutely awesome to see those things materialize. So, even though we lost to Wisconsin this year, and I wasn't happy, right? Like, I'm a fan of my memory there and the things that we accomplished. I'll always be a fan of that, and that never changes no matter where I am.
Well, this is very cool to have you here. Appreciate in the midst of
first
bowl prep.
Ever guest.
Love it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate it very much. ILL.
And I will see you in Music City.
I love it. Nashville, here we come. Navy in Nashville.
Yes, I love it.
Well, that was enjoyable.
Very fun. Famous tubists.
Have we?
Brett Bielema. Next is Gene Percorny. Sorry. I kind of bring up his name every time.
I hope we didn't set the bar too high.
Not at all.
Yeah. Like, I don't know who our next guest is.
Yeah. How do you follow that?
Yeah.
Gene Percorny. Come on. Principal tubist. Oh, wait. He's Northwestern faculty, isn't he? Yeah. We don't have to have a purple person on here.
I think we can make exceptions.
Yes.
For what unites us.
Yes. Not going to turn the eye purple or anything.
Gene Percorny, if you're listening and you want to come on Light the Eye.
Shout out.
We will gladly have you on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was great. And it sounds like, this is no surprise, but he's a man with a plan here for going forward.
Definitely. And he was, I mean, I went back and listened to that whole interview from 2020, which was 5 years ago this coming Friday. And, you know, in other parts of that, he talked about, that's where he was first saying, like, COVID's an opportunity for us. We're going to bring as many seniors back as we can. And that's what he, and I mean, he was 12 hours into the job when we recorded that. And he was talking about how he's going to go and, you know, utilize the fact that everybody gets a COVID waiver to have one of the older teams in college football and everything else. So he had a plan. You could tell he had a plan for rebuilding a college football team before he walked into his interview with Josh Mittman, whenever that was in 2020. So yeah, so here we are 5 years later, and we've seen that plan come to fruition, and I'm off in a couple weeks to go to the Music City Bowl.
That'll do it. For Light the Eye, we'll be back with more later this week. Thank you so much to our guest, Brett Bielema, for being on the program. Special shout out, Ella Peterson, doing fantastic production behind the scenes. Kevin Southworth, handling help as well. Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning, Siddle, here on the campus of the University of Illinois in the Armory, is our hosting space. Thank you to those great people. For Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. Talk to you again next time on Light the Eye.
It is.